The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 27th of November, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Neil Ricketts, CEO of Vesarion, VRS, a ticker there. Neil talks about their textile commercial partnership agreement to develop new garments utilizing their graphene ink materials. Also on the podcast, Jacqueline Danielle, CEO of Way Education, and Jacqueline discusses operational progress and the recent director share dealings. Plus, Peter Whale, Executive Director of Strategic Minerals, SML ticker there, provides a comprehensive update on recent corporate and operational announcements. And as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists, in fact, top 10 versions of these lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk. And got to say, if you have the app, the Vox Markets app, it's free, download, and you receive an RNS, and you like the contents of that RNS, hit the thumbs up button, because that will give it the opportunity to be shared more widely. For example, it could get on this podcast if it's in the top five. And also, if it's in the top 10, of course, we'll get on the front page of voxmarkets.co.uk.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Ricketts, CEO of Vesarion, VRS is ticker there. Neil, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. It's a long time, so we've been busy. So, and I know you've been busy, but we're here. So let's get this done.
Yes. Well, you've got some RNS at the day, so Textile Commercial Partnership Agreement, which is good news, of course. And we'll dig into that. But as always, Neil, like I say, I haven't been here for a while. If someone is listening to this podcast and it's one of the first times they've heard you or not heard you before, just summarize Vesarion, please.
Okay, so we're an advanced materials company based out of the University of Manchester and the University of Cambridge. And what we do is we specialize in exploiting these new technologies from these universities. And in this case, what we're talking about is graphene. We're talking about one of the most exciting materials ever discovered. And we're leading the charge on it. So really exciting times for us. And what you're seeing now is the commercialization.
Well, that's quite a bold statement there. I quite like that. Because, you know, like I said, graphene is still, you know, in its infancy as far as commercialization is concerned, because it's still a lot of unknowns, I suppose. And like I said, but I mean, of the developers of graphene around the world, can you honestly, hand on heart, say you are at the forefront?
We're definitely one of the companies, if not the company. We have our materials independently verified both in China and in the US, and that means a lot to our customers. We have the really good key connections with the University of the Universities of Manchester and Cambridge, and we have access to some of the best facilities in the world at the Graphene Engineering Innovation Center and the National Graphene Institute and the Cambridge Graphene Center. So I think it's a valid statement.
Yeah, but no, because listen, when there's a hot thing, a hot issue or hot commodity or anything that pops up on the scene and obviously money pours into it, you know, a lot of people say, oh, we do this, and they'll just, I mean, I've seen companies do it with cobalt or lithium, you know, they've just gone searching for and been explorers all of a sudden of lithium when actually, you know, if you look back 3 months previously, they weren't bothered with the lithium at all. So it's everyone jumps in the bandwagon. So it's always good to know when you are or someone's researching a company who's dealing with graphene, that they are looking at a bona fide company. Because, I mean, there are plenty out there, aren't they, claiming to have, you know, graphene, you know?
So sometimes in a journey, it's not the person who gets there the first, it's the person who gets there in the best shape. Yeah. And that's what we've tried to do with this business. We've tried to make sure that we have all the key foundations in place, and that is just continuing to solidify the right people, the right facilities, the right connections, the right collaborations, the right people, the right messages. All this takes time, and that can be painful for shareholders and you know, but it is absolutely key to ensure that there is sustainability in the business, and it's not just a flash that everybody's just got excited about.
Yeah. Okay, let's look at this Textile Commercial Partnership Agreement. Who's it with and what's it for?
So this is a named agreement now. This is with a company called Mass Holdings. It's probably the biggest company that no one's ever heard of. They have, you know, almost 100,000 employees. They have 53 manufacturing sites. They produce goods for a lot of the well-known brands that we see on a day-to-day basis. They're kind of the unsung heroes behind the scenes, and they just get on with business. You know, so this is a $2 billion operation. It's not a small a corner shop by any stretch of the imagination, and these are kind of the key people that we want to work with. And this is, you know, just the first of our five key opportunities at the moment that the business is focused on in order to prove to our shareholders and to other companies that we can commercialize this really, really exciting new technology.
Yeah, and so what does it entail? So you'll be using the new garments, they're saying, utilizing your graphene ink material. So what's this for? What's it doing here?
So graphene ink came out of the University of Cambridge that we bought in 2017. So we're talking about really, really rapid development here. And we have a number of products now in our portfolio, nanine, graphinks, hexatine, and so on. And and what we're seeing here is this particular technology is very, very suitable for the textile industry. It's put into the actual material itself. It's put onto the material. It helps with thermodynamics, it helps with sweat wicking, antibacterial. It has a number of really, really key things that the textile industry is really desperate to have. And it outperforms in independent testing what is currently out there. So that's why there's so much interest.
All right, so it's not just for like smart clothing. It performs a lot of different things, you know.
So what we look for as a company is quick wins. And these are things that we can turn into cash immediately, and then we will use that cash to exploit bigger and better technologies at a later stage. So smart clothing will come, absolutely no doubt about it. It will take a few years to develop things like biometric analysis of patients. That's all coming, and you know, Chris Cockford is doing a really, really great job of pioneering things like smart bandages. Well, that same technology can go into textiles as well. It can tell you how many repetitions you've done in your exercise. It can tell you what your fatigue levels are, and that's going to take some time to develop, but these are the guys to develop it with. And that's why these companies are so excited to be working with Vicerion and the resources that we've got around us, because they can start with one project and that rolls into a multitude of other projects, and that makes for a really really easy and efficient sales technique.
As far as this agreement is concerned, if it all goes to plan, obviously you're hoping to generate revenue from this in some way. Is there any way of knowing how long off that will be if this does go to plan?
No, we can't put any forecast on how big this market is or how big our part of this really big market is. What we can say is that we know this is the right place to go fishing. We know that the fish are big in this area, and that if we land one, it's going to be a big one. So it's a case of just going through this process, which we've been going through, and making sure we're doing all the right things, making sure we've got the right connections and contacts, as I said before, and then just following through with the process.
Yeah. And talking about disruption, I mean, I know you're a big fan of Elon Musk, and you've got a Tesla yourself there. What do you think of their truck?
I think it's amazing. So when I first saw it, I wondered what the hell he was doing. And then I put myself in his shoes. And if you're going to be disruptive, let's be disruptive. And that's the same for us as it is for Tesla. You know, what he's done there is he's taken something and he's actually manufactured it to function. So it's, you know, it's a good beast. It's a big beast. But it actually challenges everything in the automotive industry. And I think we're just all a little bit too comfortable. And when these people come along, like, you know, Isambard Brunel and Whittle and all these, and they tell us that we can do these amazing things, I think we all sort of just laugh at them, to be honest. And then, you know, within a few years, we're all adopting that. So I'm seeing more and more electric vehicles. I was one of the first ones to make that move. And, you know, what I'm seeing is actually people are coming around to it really, really quickly. And do you know what? I think the truck, I think it's a statement. Mm-hmm. It's not about the truck. It's about actually, do you know what? What we're going to do is we're going to challenge what is the norm. And I think he's doing a great job. And I've got a lot of time and I admire him so much for what he's doing.
It's funny, that demonstration where, you know, they threw a big metal ball at the windows and the windows smashed when they shouldn't have smashed. I mean, that created a lot of attention. And apparently he got 150,000 orders the back of that. But
he's got over 200,000 orders in 72 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
These are not cheap vehicles. They're not, you know, they're not. They're really challenging in terms of aesthetics, in terms of the way that they operate compared to what is in the market at the moment. And on the back of that, you know, he's been able to bank a significant amount of interest. He can go to his investors now and say, look, I've got the interest. All I need now is the cash. And he'll start putting it into production. And, you know, I'm an engineer, so I believe that we should look at everything around us and improve on it. And I think he's got the right model there. I think he's got as much publicity as he could have got for a multi-million pound advertising campaign, which is what we would normally do. He's been able to in a great way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was deliberate, but it was a happy accident for him, because like I said, if he'd just gone to plan, I don't think we'd got half the attention. And the thing with that truck is, whatever, if you see one now, in fact, I do it with Tesla. I mean, I know Tesla are not as different looking as that truck is, but even when I got the kids in the cars, oh, there's a Tesla there, guys, and you see more and more of them. And so they are an advert for themselves. And that truck, if you see one of those trucks about, straight away, someone will say, if you don't know what it is, you'll say, what is that? And if you do know, you'll say, look at that, it's a Tesla truck. So it's an advert for itself. It sells itself, doesn't it, you know?
Yeah. To be honest, when I looked at it, I thought there's no way I'd want one of those. And then I thought, do you know what? I've got a couple of dogs. I live out in the country. It's a real statement. It's a real kind of, you know, do you know what? We shouldn't be content with what we've currently got. We should want smart clothing, and we should want electric vehicles, and we should. And I think the consumers are now taking charge of the market. And what he's been able to do there is, as I say, he's been able to really challenge what goes on. If he'd have brought a pickup truck that looked like an ordinary pickup truck, I doubt he'd have got anywhere near the response that he's currently got. Yeah. And I think he's done a great job.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, when I first saw it, I thought, you know, I thought it was something out of Minecraft. My kids play Minecraft. That's really odd looking. But no, I suppose that you yourself there, yeah, you are in a cutting edge environment with graphene. And I suppose you've got to live the life, Neil. You've got to buy one of these trucks. You know, you've got to get in it and you've got to say, listen, I'm into graphene. I'm going to get a truck.
You're gonna get me in trouble because I'm gonna put an order down for I've got an order down for a truck.
How much are they going for? What's the price tags on them?
The deposit is $100, which is fully refundable, and the price of the truck is about $40,000. So it'll be about the same price in pounds.
Yeah,
if you go for the basic one.
Yeah, oh, that's not too bad. Okay, cool. Marvel stuff. Okay,
well, what a statement to make, you know. And if they come out in 2 or 3 years, what? You know, what will the world look like in 2 or 3 years' time?
Yeah. Marvellous. Okay, as always, Neil, come on. Three reasons, then, why someone listening right now should add Vesarion to their watch list, please.
Okay, so the first reason is about these connections and contacts that we've got with central government, the University of Manchester, the University of Cambridge, these really sound, firm foundations that we've built up over the last few years. The second thing is that this is probably one of the most exciting areas to be invested in at the moment. It's really challenging how we currently manufacture and make a lot of different products, everything from construction to textiles. And the third thing is that I'm the largest shareholder, so you can guarantee that my aims and ambitions for the company are absolutely aligned with those of the long-term holders.
Yeah, and maybe Neil will give you a ride in his truck if he gets one, if you become a shareholder. At the general meeting, you should get around and say, you can have a go in my truck, my Tesla truck. Marvellous stuff. Neil, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jacqueline Danielle, CEO of Way Education. Ticker there is WEY. Jacqueline, thanks for joining me.
It's good to catch up again.
Yeah, well, listen, we've had a couple of RNSs out of late regarding sort of more corporate side of the business, directors, you know, buying and selling shares and between them and all this stuff, and we'll dig into that in a bit. But as always, Jackie, if someone's listening right now, never heard of Way Education, how do you describe it to them?
Okay, simply, it's an online education group. We operate two brands, Inter High School and Academy 21. Inter High School is an independent school. It's just on the internet. So we've got students age from as young as 8 in the junior school, right through secondary school, taking GCSEs into sixth form where they take A-levels. So it's a complete school experience. It just happens to be on the internet and not down the road. Academy 21 helps other schools and institutions deliver their education to their pupils who aren't currently attending their school for whatever reason. And in both brands, it's important to say that it's live, fully interactive lessons with proper teachers. That's essentially it.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, and we'll touch on how operations are going in a bit. Before we do, our last couple of RNSs is concerning yourself there and directed dealings of shares. The last one, you sold 2.75 million shares, which you still own, obviously, 7.5% of the company. But I had even someone ask me, he said, why are they selling shares? The directors, and investors always get nervous when they see directors selling shares, you know? And there are many different reasons for directors selling shares. So explain, Jackie, is this a reflection of the business or is it just a personal reason?
Well, yes. I mean, we don't use this platform to discuss trades and dealing. We do use it to give your followers and investors some colour around business information. And obviously, I have to consider the shareholder base over the medium term. And I'm really pleased that a number of institutions recently and following the announcement have been keen to be part of that base. And we've really earned their credibility. And they believe our aspirations are, you know, are wholly believable. And in order for them to be on board, I mean, don't forget, my husband and I are founders of both of these brands. We are the longest standing holding. And your followers might realize that often entrepreneurial founders invest absolutely everything in their businesses. And after 16 years, I've got a couple of bills to pay.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it. Well, do you know what? It's funny how people look at the amount being sold, but not at the amount you still hold, you know? And because 7.5% is still a decent chunk, isn't it? And even while we're here, because what people are worried about, essentially, is that the operations, you know, like I said, you've done some decent updates. And in fact, even this year has been quite significant change. And you're still doing very well and growing at a good clip. But so how are operations? And that's what investors worry about. They think, oh, they're selling because, which is a silly thing to think, really. But are they selling because the company isn't doing as well? But how are things going at the moment, Jackie?
Things are going very well. So over the last, I think it's 2 weeks since our announcement of results, we've really been doing some quite serious planning to meet the second part of our vision. So if you remember, we had an initial part of our vision was to become the size of the largest secondary school in the UK, and we're absolutely on track for that. But the second part was to become larger than any multi-academy trust in the UK. Now, those are big numbers. We're talking about 20,000 plus students. And that requires some quite serious planning if we're going to meet it. We can't carry on what we're doing. Well, we could, but the chances of meeting it might be considerably slimmer. Mm-hmm. So we've been looking at research to inform our pedagogical approach to this. So that means really to the uninitiated that the learning environment in which a child learns, the learning task, so what they're learning and how they're learning it, and how students and teachers interact, and the capacity of students to learn. And there's a lot of research on this, and we've been looking closely at that, and also carrying out research of our own. We have also, so that's the sort of pedagogical side of things. We've also been talking to numerous suppliers and developers to scope the technology, because if we're going to meet these this ambition quite quickly, which is what I want to do, then we need to really think about the learner experience going forward. And I'm quite excited about that. We've got some really good creative ideas going. We've been looking at our platform and how we can really make that happen. We've been looking at what we call content. So this essentially are the resources that we use, the learning materials. And again, we've got some really creative ideas that we're working on with others to bring that to fruition. And then we've got what we call the delivery of content. So that's really how teachers present things to students to help them learn. And there's some really exciting developments in what's called immersive learning. And some of your followers will have heard of things like that. So we've been looking very closely at that. And we've also been making a really good analysis of the market and our coverage of it currently, as well as our potential for penetrating it and the future demand. Mm-hmm. We're also looking to further refine our plan for reaching those consumers and really, keeping hold of this competitive advantage. And then lastly, we've been looking quite seriously at capacity. We know that our team, our human resource team, have the confidence. They certainly have the commitment. But what we've done over the last couple of weeks is really expand our connections and our competences, because we're committed to continuous improvement. So there's been a lot going on. Personally, I'm very excited because I'm ambitious. I've still got plenty of skin in this game. And so it's probably the best time so far in the history of these brands.
Yeah. And when you're looking, like I said, to grow, but you have to grow sensibly, of course. I mean, are there, acquisitions in your sights, or is it basically purely organic?
We would never say no if one presented itself. But at the moment, looking at things, I think this is something that we can do. There isn't anything really suitable. Of course, we're always, sort of scanning to see what's around. But we can quite comfortably do this. And it's probably right that we should. However, I'm not going to rule anything out in the future. But we're working quite hard to make sure that we really achieve that vision. And there's lots to be done. Like I said, we can't just assume that will happen with organic growth. Keep on doing what we're doing. I'm not prepared to settle for that. And neither is the board. They are ambitious. They're keen to push forward. So that is what we're doing. And there's a lot going on in the background to achieve that.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent stuff. Okay, Jackie, as always, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of the progress you're making here, but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, well, first of all, they absolutely should, because I've said before, and I'll keep on saying it, we are revolutionary, and revolutionary in education, and education's important to everybody. Number two, we've got a solid platform from which to grow. We've grown every year, and we are going to continue to do that, and that's more than enough reasons to follow. Third one, we are on track to meet our ambition currently. And like I said, I'm very keen to do that. My world is still in way education, and that's what we are going to do.
Excellent stuff. Jackie, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Absolutely. Bye-bye for now.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Peter Whale, Executive Director of Strategic Minerals. SML is ticker. Peter, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. How are you doing?
Good. We haven't spoke for a while. It's good to get you on, because I know, it's been a bit quiet anyway, but it's nice to get you on to get an update. And as always, Peter, for people who maybe are new to the podcast, haven't heard of you, just give them a brief summary as to what Strategic's all about, if you could, please.
Certainly. Apologies, I am a bit husky this morning, but I think maybe that's an upgrade. Let's see. Strategic Minerals, or SML, is a profitable, diversified producing mineral company with assets at different stages and different stages of development across safe jurisdictions. We supply magnetite. We're looking to mine copper, tin and tungsten in the future. And to your point about not speaking for a while, Yes, there's probably been a fairly slim pickings in terms of RNSs, but that doesn't mean we haven't been extremely busy on everything behind the scenes. And progress is hard to make, I think, in the general environment, and I'm not making excuses, but people don't make decisions quickly. There's a lot of uncertainty. I was actually at an event last night and somebody wasn't prepared to commit any funds. So this is nothing to do with strategic. This was something different. But they were saying, well, I'm not going to make a decision until after the election. And a lot of people will do that. They won't be prepared to take the risks about major things, no matter what the opinion polls say or the odds or that sort of thing.
Do you know, I agree that the whole Brexit thing, I mean, you know, what a lot of people, regardless of which way you go, you know, remain or leave, at the moment where we are, it's creating more problems having no decision either way than anything, because like you say, people are not investing, they're holding back, and that is the biggest negative effect, isn't it, on the whole thing. So we've got to move forward somehow, because like I said, you know, lack of investment will stop companies growing and moving forward. And so, yeah, it is annoying. And so I can see exactly why someone would want to wait, especially now, considering we are, a couple of weeks away from the general election. So hopefully we'll get some positive result there and it'll move investment forward, you know? So anyway, let's move. Go on.
Yeah, I think the risk appetite in general is waiting to be, the papers are waiting to be lit, and it may not be the day of the election, but Q1, I think, is set up really well for a period of risk on, and you probably have things solved in terms of the trade wars, which markets are almost getting a bit bored of by now. I mean, you've seen copper rebounding quite well recently, regardless of what the headlines say.
Yeah, okay. But, let's go through the parts of street minerals. You mentioned copper there, so related in a way is Lee Creek. What's happening there, Peter?
Okay, so, I mean, Lee Creek, the more we look at Lee Creek, the more there is. It's quite a huge animal to digest and move forward with. There are almost too many options to consider. And that's why it's taken some time to work through the feasibility studies for the different resources within what we have. I mean, it's not just one deposit. There are multiple deposits. We've got three JORC resources. And they're varying grades, they're varying materials to process. And so it's a question of trying to thread the needle in terms of what generates cash flow quickly, but also what fits together in a jigsaw puzzle for the longevity of the project in the most sensible, economic, practical way. And you know, these aren't the sort of things you just stick into a computer model and get an answer. It is very much a subjective judgment, and we have to go back and forth and look at the analyses. But the real conclusion here is this is a significant copper play. It goes likely beyond what we know now, and we're talking near-term production as well as development, as well as exploration, never mind probable JVs, M&A in the future. This is, you know, the really early stages, but we're actually getting onto the first step to really move this forward. And people have looked at the feasibility study that came out, and there's obviously a lot of comments and questions on that. There's a copper price which is probably around 10% higher than the spot price in that feasibility study. We actually would be comfortably profitable at current spot copper prices, but the feasibility study is based on a longer period of production over time for a number of years. So we're using what we believe is an accurate blended price over that period of time. That doesn't mean to say it will end up being the average price. Of course, we can't see the future. But all things being equal, the consensus is for higher copper. And 10% probably isn't a giant ask in terms of year's magnitude time scale. So regardless, we have a very good safety margin on the economics. Mm-hmm. We also have referred to the funding, which moves us forward to get into production. There are a number of discussions going on. Some are more advanced than others. We really needed to complete the feasibility study to help join the dots to take things more to the end game with the funding solutions. And we're also looking at the right funding solutions. The kind of people we're talking to typically are mining specialists or funders who only look at these sort of projects, and they'll want to do proper due diligence and understand what we have, especially if there are offtakes involved or prepayments or that kind of thing. It's not a vanilla, okay, we need X dollars, give us a loan, etc. This is much more of a bespoke transaction. It's very much in the theme of the way that we try to operate and partner with people. So those discussions could be concluded at any time. It's hard to have visibility on that. Is there a seasonal factor into year end? Maybe not. It's hard to say. We've also made reference to the permit applications, or PEPAs, which get Lee Creek approval to start production. Again, we couldn't blindly make these applications until we had a clear idea on our plan, which required the outcome of the feasibility study. And we're also not rushing with these PEPAs for a couple of reasons. There is a somewhat of a seasonal period in Australia, and even if we submit them now, it maybe doesn't progress very quickly compared to submitting them in the new year. Also, don't forget, as I said about copper prices, do we want to sell copper sooner at lower prices, or would we rather sell later at higher prices? I think that's a bit of an easy question to answer. Funding is not conditional on a PEPA. I think I'd be confident in saying we will get a PEPA. It's just a question of how long that process takes. There could be queries along the way, and we have to revise what we're doing, but getting a PEPA is something that we'd be extremely confident on. People have suggested that there are problems at Lee Creek that we haven't revealed, or we're hiding things. There are no problems at Lee Creek. It was a cheap asset, which inevitably isn't and wasn't plug and play. That's why we've taken a lot of time to de-risk and follow a clear process. Rushing a restart at Lee Creek could have been absolutely disastrous, or we could have got lucky and then unlucky. So we've been extremely diligent in this process. Longer is frustrating for shareholders, longer is frustrating for us, but it's better overall. There's actually a PowerPoint presentation of the feasibility study, which has gone up on our website. So I urge people to take a look at that. There's a lot of detail there as well. That's probably enough about Lee Creek.
Next Cobre. I mean, you did an update September quarter 2019, you know, sales and cash balances update there. So take us through what's happening there, if you could, Peter.
Yeah, Cobre is kind of a dark horse in a way. It continues to generate cash. It more than covers our overheads, which include remuneration, which is definitely feeling like a hot potato at the moment. People seem to have the idea that we're paid multi-millions or quite ridiculous amounts, which remuneration isn't as significant or as lucrative as some may think. Bear in mind that John and I own almost 8% of the company, and that was bought with our own money. Do you think we'd really want to overpay ourselves as a result? It doesn't really make sense. And I would strongly defend to anybody that we are not overpaid or paid too much. With that in mind, we do continue to keep costs extremely lean, and we're very flexible in terms of looking at how all of the cash flow works. With respect to Cobre, we're often asked about new customers. I think people suggest that as though we haven't ever thought of looking for new customers. As we've said, there is a captive market for transport, which often limits how far we can go. But sometimes there are clients maybe who weren't taking from us, they were taking from somebody else, or new clients that appear. And we're always investigating these. People follow up with inquiries, some of them review samples, they look at the logistics, and more often than not, it doesn't work because of the economics. But there is always scope for increased sales above the core level we're at, which is actually still pretty decent. We've had this well-publicized issue with the main customer, mm-hmm. but if you rewind, there was a new large customer before that even larger customer, and we still have this large customer. It's a cement company, and you know, they're doing good business with us, and they're currently our largest customer. So that's, it underpins the business really well. I wanted to add a bit of clarity on share trading. I recently bought shares the day after our interims round. Now, to sort of illustrate the rules here, there's a 30-day mandatory close period before any financial results for board. So 30 days before interims, regardless of anything else, board is in a blackout period. John and I were definitely intending to buy if we had a window. I literally bought the day after the interims. John was waiting for some funds to come through from something else. They didn't come through. And in the meantime, we ended up being inside on concluding the feasibility study. And I would argue strongly that we're inside on various other things at the moment as well. So John missed his window, unfortunately, to buy, although it's actually lower than where I bought anyway. So people get a second bite of the cherry. But also, it's been suggested that because I'm a director of Cornwall Resources, maybe I'm not inside on what's going on with Lee Creek. Well, that's completely untrue. If a director is inside on something, even if he or she hasn't told the other directors, the board is deemed inside as a whole by default. So it really doesn't matter. There's not one rule for one director just because they haven't told somebody, or at least that's how it works if people follow the rules. So it's very clear on that. It's also been suggested that as I'm the Cornwall Resources Director, that's all I'm looking at and I'm not looking at anything else. Now, clearly as the sole director now of Cornwall Resources, it should be obvious that that's a strong focus for me. But my role at Strategic is still constant, and it's a question of being involved with everything. But maybe I do take the lead on some of the Cornwall Resources things with Brett. But that's just the way it is. It's not that I'm not looking at anything else.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you own shares in in Strategic Minerals, don't you? So, I mean, you're going to be obviously caring about all parts of the business, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So moving to Cornwall Resources, we had an RNS yesterday. We got almost £250,000 back in research and development rebate, which reflects the money that we'd spent previously on the drilling program and exploration. And it's been suggested that these are kind of simple processes to get the rebates. It could be true, but believe me, you have to go through a lot of steps and justifications and ensure you follow the procedures. It's not just a question of filling in a one-page form and saying, send me the check. You really have to prove what you're doing is adding value and it is part of research and development. And it's a good testament to the way that our team operate and the way that we've prepared the application to ensure now for the third year running that we've got a material amount back, which makes a big difference to bringing in the costs. And ironically, in this timing, we're due a payment in January to NAE, the previous owner of half of Cornwall Resources, and this payment's significantly more than that. So Cornwall Resources is sort of paying for the other half of itself, which is quite a nice thing to happen. Cornwall Resources, this transaction has no doubt created a little bit of controversy in terms of when we bought it, why we bought it, how much did we pay. The history here is this has been something that was always likely to happen at some point as far as SML was concerned, but there was a question of when was the opportune timing, when could a deal be brokered. Let me tell you that the previous MD of NAE was a geologist and was extremely keen on Redmoor, and actually either would never have sold it or would have only sold it for a price that wouldn't have worked for us. And when he left, there was an opportunity to broker a transaction, which actually was a very good deal for us. I think it was a fairly mutually good deal for NAE as well. But we've done the transaction. We wanted something that worked for us, and this works. And now, you know, we're very happy to have this world-class asset. And perhaps there hasn't been a dramatic amount of RNS-able news flow with Cornwall Resources, but we are extremely busy behind the scenes. The game plan is very much build a mine. We have 100% of it at the moment. I'm sure we won't have 100% of it for an operational mine. We are going to need partners to assist with the funding and development. But we are uploading and digitizing a lot of data, older records, continuing high-level research to improve our understanding of our resource, which conservatively comes out at already a very good level. There's lots of presentations going on, a local engagement with residents, the council, industry groups, both academic and in the industry. We've got a lot of our mineral rights left to explore. We've got a lot of confidence of a higher resource and a longer life of project. We're also building relationships across the board with potential future partners or funders, as well as those who show interest to collaborate with us, whether this is other companies that are involved in space or people involved in different new techniques or some of the universities we've worked with and had students working on site and doing analysis and sharing research to co-develop initiatives. So there is plenty going on. You just may not find that it's material enough to read in an RNS, but this R&D rebate is very helpful.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And just generally looking at all projects, what's the next sort of big milestone, next bit of news you're hoping to generate then, Peter?
I guess, as I said, on Lee Creek, some progress conclusions on funding the way forward could come at any time. That would probably be the most significant. I think Cobre continuing to do business as usual and Redmore increasing awareness. We also launched a website recently because we've had a lot more interest in people looking for us and not being able to find us necessarily. So there is a lot of decent interest. Everyone's heard of South Crofty and Strongbow. Cornish Lithium has done a fantastic job with their PR, and that's captured definitely the public's imagination when they did their crowdfunding. Cornwall Resources, not so much on the map, but that is changing, believe me.
Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff. Okay. Final thing. Three quick reasons then why someone listening right now who's not following you should add you to their watch list, please, Peter.
Certainly. So step back and review what you get for currently an £8 million market cap. Cobre is profitable, covering group overheads. Lee Creek will be a cash cow. And numbers on the feasibility RNS that was just been out looks really good. Redmore was one of the largest underground undeveloped tin projects. You get all of that for £8 million. We're actually sitting at 2016 share price at the moment, quite ludicrously. Sure, there's been some issuance and the market cap is not comparing like for like. But pull up a graph and have a look. You'll probably be quite surprised, which is really at odds with the recent updates and the potential of the company. In 2016, we didn't own Lee Creek, and we'd only first begun to invest in Cornwall Resources, which is now a validated project. Nor did we have anywhere near the level of sales we have at Cobre. Concluding with some numbers, substantial pre-tax cash surplus of $30 million for Lee Creek, annual cash flow from Cobre, and Redmore's latest Scopus study earlier in the year, which showed, I believe, a conservative NPV of $94 million.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Peter, as always, thanks for coming on, and let's hope you're not such a stranger in the future, and you pop on a bit more. Like I said, news flow is picking up, so no doubt we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Absolutely, Justin. Thanks a lot.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Way Education. Jacqueline just on the podcast. At four, i3 Energy. i3E's ticker there. At three, Petro Resources. PET up 12.12% to 18.5 pence. Where's i3 today? It's down 1.3% to 18.75. Way is down a smidge at 0.8% at 11.75. At two, Mobile Streams Online is 10% up at 0.165 pence. MOS ticker there. And up again today, Rockfire Resources up 100% yesterday, and now it's up again today, 1.425 pence. 32.56% up. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Blue Star Capital, update on Satoshi Pay. At four, 80 Energy. That's Charlie One Appraisal One update. At three, it's Strategic Minerals, receipt of R&D tax rebate from HMRC. We talked about that on the podcast. At two, UK Oil and Gas, HH2Z completed wholesale. Number one is from Vesarian, Textile Commercial Partnership Agreement, of course, which I chatted to Neil about. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.